For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
I'm not going to lie, you're slacking. You're slacking on starting that business you've been holding off on. It's just living in your head. And if you don't act now, that idea is going to leave, or maybe someone's going to take that idea. And there's a tool that I personally use, and that is Shopify. You don't need to be a web designer. You can just start moving, zooming in, adding the text you need, adding pictures you need. And Shopify has so many templates you can use from. Get it out of your head and onto a website with Shopify. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. They make it easy to manage growing your business. They help with details like shipping, taxes, and payments from one single dashboard, allowing you to focus on all the important stuff like growing your business. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Established in 2025 has a nice ring to it, doesn't it? Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/sonoro, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/sonoro to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/sonoro.
Your data is like gold to hackers, and they'll sell it to the highest bidder. Are you protected? McAfee helps shield you, blocking suspicious texts, malicious emails, and fraudulent websites. McAfee Secure VPN lets you browse safely, and its AI-powered tech scam detector spots threats instantly. You'll also get up to $2 million of award-winning antivirus and identity theft protection, all for just $39.99 for your first year. Visit McAfee.com. Cancel anytime. Terms apply.
Money as a problem-solving skill.
A former coach of mine, Dan Sullivan, had this wonderful saying that was, if you have enough money to solve a problem, you don't have a problem. And that's true. You don't have the actual problem, but that creates other problems.
Thanks to Sana Skin Studio for supporting the No podcast. Sana is a skin studio that is shifting the relationship with your skin and your products through goal-driven facials, real guidance, and clean skincare. Stay tuned for our promo code so you can receive $25 off of your first facial at Sana Skin Studio.
Welcome to the No podcast with me, Nikki Spo.
Welcome back, babes. You are listening to The Know, where it is not about knowing everything, but about coming to know ourselves. I am your hostess, Nikki Spolstra, and I am so glad that you're here. This is your call to action to subscribe to the podcast so that you never miss an episode and get automatic downloads, which helps to put our meaningful conversations in front of a wider audience. There's a reason you tuned in today. It is not a mistake. Also, if you are looking for deeper connection, which I believe so many of us are, there is a space for you where you can be yourself, come home to yourself, have a beautiful crew of women supporting you on your journey, where we are all becoming her, where we are all finding the it energy within ourselves, because she, that woman you want to be, the highest version of yourself and your integrity, she is actually us. And together we are becoming the her of our highest desires. In our exclusive online women's community, we are talking about all of life's chapters in a safe and supportive space. We are coming together for webinars from experts in the wellness industry, and we have endless resources available to help you get your biggest, greatest, most glorious homecoming of your life. And I have a gift for you, especially for my podcast audience, a lifetime discounted rate to access our group, Becoming Her. And I will link the details in the show notes. And I will hope to see you in there. If you have any questions, you can always send me a DM on Instagram at Nikki Sapspo. I'm pretty good at getting back to every single message I receive. I look forward to having you on this journey with us. So this episode's guest, Myra Salzer, is founder of the Wealth Conservancy. She is a TEDx speaker and an advocate for inheritors navigating the complexities of wealth. Through her firm, she offers life and financial coaching to help clients harness their inherited assets and pursue meaningful goals. Myra is the author of four books, including Living Richly, Seizing the Potential of Inherited Wealth, and regularly speaks on wealth prejudice and financial empowerment. When she's not advising clients, Myra enjoys the quiet life in the Colorado foothills, sharing her home with her husband and dog. And she is also learning tap dancing, which as a former dancer myself, you know, I'm looking forward to hearing about. So with that, let's get started with Myra Salzer. Myra, welcome to the Know, where it is not about knowing everything, but about coming to know ourselves.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
I'm so happy you're here too. So tell us a little bit about your book, Living Richly, Seizing the Potential of Inherited Wealth.
That book follows three inheritors through their journey to integrate with their wealth. And inheritors tend to go through stages in their relationship with their money, from innocence to denial to ignorant acceptance, learning and growing, and then becoming an integrated authority. And each of these three examples goes through those stages in a completely different way and under completely different circumstances to get to a phase where they are integrated authorities in their own right and in their own way.
Integrated authorities. I'm writing that down. So right here, I have innocence, denial, acceptance, and then integrated authority. So do your books cover those individually? Like each book covers something different, a different stage, or how is it outlined? Because I want people to be able to access this information should they be going through this.
No, it doesn't specifically go into that. Maybe The Cabin might. Which is another one of my books, and you missed the one stage that I think is the really eye-opening stage, which is the learning growing stage, the fourth stage.
Fourth stage, learning and growing.
So yeah, let me go into each stage just superficially a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
Innocent stage, of course, everybody has been in the innocent stage at some point. It is, you get everything you want. And money grows on trees, and you never have to want for anything. And most people get out of that innocent stage when they are given their first no. No, you can't have a new tricycle. You have to have your brother's hand-me-down. Or no, we can't go out for dinner because we can't afford it. And that innocent stage for inheritors, often, if they're raised in a family of wealth and abundance is delayed. And with that delay, or that is because they haven't had those no, they haven't had to overcome obstacles. They haven't had to learn. They haven't had to create. And so in general, and I'm speaking very generally, the inheritor can have a delayed maturity. The next stage, denial, is the stage where they pretend it doesn't exist, where they don't tell anybody, they're embarrassed to even think about it, they don't want anyone to know, and they don't face it themselves, they don't open their own statements, they don't have any idea what their taxable income is or where their investments are. They're in denial.
It sounds like there's a lot of shame in that, like this denial where you're saying that they don't want to tell anybody. Is there, and the embarrassment you mentioned, like is shame a part of that?
Absolutely. When you have something that you didn't work for yourself, there's a disconnect between the asset and the self. Mm. And a lot of times they don't feel deserving. It just landed on their laps. And as you said, wealth prejudice comes into play. People have attitudes about others with money. And the inheritor picks up on that and doesn't want their colleagues, their friends, their peers to know that they have those assets because they don't want to be liked for it and they don't want to be disliked for it. And people have very strong reactions to inheritors.
Before we move on to the next part of that, so we just covered innocence and we covered denial,
And we're going to move into acceptance. But before we do that, I actually want to share a story about somebody, a friend of mine, a long time ago. Their parents came into wealth as this friend of mine was a teenager, right? And so the parent got a brand new car at that time. I think that my friend was in high school, and the parent got a BMW, right? And this friend of mine refused to get in the car, would walk to school, and the dad would like drive next to my friend being like, get in the car, get in the car. It's freezing outside, like get in the car. And this friend of mine would not get in the car. Like would not get in the car because this friend did not want to be seen getting into the dad's fancy new car by my friend's peers at school. And so I think that that's a really good example of that feeling, you know, the shame and embarrassment and like, oh my gosh, I don't want people to treat me differently. I don't want to be liked to exactly what you said, to be liked or disliked for it.
I have a client who would ask the chauffeur to drop them off two blocks away from school so that they didn't drive up and it looked like they were walking to school.
Right. Yeah. So it's definitely a real thing. I think it turns up in other ways. I experience it even with my son in elementary school, where he'll come home from school and say, oh, this fourth grader wants to be my friend. And I'm like, why? Oh, that's interesting. Why does the fourth grader want to be your friend? Like, how do you know that? And he said, well, he knows who my is. And I have to have very real and age-appropriate conversations with my son about that, right? Where I'm not trying to let him lose the glimmer in his eye of like making new friends and being excited about making friends. And also not trying to like give him this idea that I think he's too young right now to know, to have it explained to him that people have bad intentions or have false intentions. I think that there will be a time and place for that at some point. But I try to be empowering with him and send the message that he gets to choose his friends as well. Like they don't just get to choose him. Like you get a say in who your friends are. You get to assess, like, is that somebody you like? Are they nice to your first grade friends? Are they nice to other adults? Are they nice to your teacher? Are they respectful? Are they nice to your parents and to your siblings? You know, you get to have power of choice in the equation of them being friends with you. Like they don't just get to choose that they're friends with you because they know who your daddy is. That's not how it works, right? In a way that's digestible for a young person. But like this is
definitely an age-appropriate method to teach yourself.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I've seen it a lot in my life. You know, like I've seen friends of mine grow up with a lot of wealth, and their parents made sure that they, if they drove a car when they were 16, they drove like entry-level, like used vehicles, you know, that were like, more affordable vehicles than like a luxury vehicle, right? And then there's that example of my other friend growing up who wouldn't get in the nice car, you know? And then there's other friends that I knew growing up that had everything and wanted everything, you know? So there's like a full spectrum of it. And I think it's really important that we're talking about it, especially a lot of my audience is based here in Miami, and we see wealth of all kinds, whether you grew up with it, whether it's inherited, whether women have the money, men have the money, and all types of professional areas. So I think it's a great conversation. I'm glad we're having it. And so we went from the innocence of it into the denial of it. And now we're moving into the acceptance stage.
Yeah, ignorant acceptance is the point at which you recognize that, yes, there is money. Yes, you're a package deal with it. There's nothing you can do about it. I mean, there are people who couldn't give their assets away if they wanted to because it's tied up in a family operating business or in trust or whatever. And so accepting that this is a part of who you are, it's not who you are, it's a part of who you are.
Yeah.
And that's the first stage one has to be in order to really start to understand who they are as a result of their wealth. How does it affect them? And how do they go about learning and growing? That's the next stage, so that they can control what they can and they can impact what they can. So, of course, in denial, they don't impact their assets at all.
Right.
And the learning growing stage is the stage at which they try to understand as much as possible, to learn. They spend a lot of time. They read the Wall Street Journal. They, you know, go to board meetings and they really try to understand what they have and what their relationship is with it. So does that, you know, do their assets support $100,000 a year or $100,000 a month? Or, you know, what is this to them? And then how do they want to spend that or grow that or give it away? And so they get that sense of perspective. And then in the integrated authority stage, they understand all those things. Their net worth and their self-worth are aligned. And
I love that. I think I'm going to title the episode that, when your net worth and your self-worth are aligned.
So getting to that point, I mean, once they understand their assets, then they get to work on their self-worth. And we do a lot of counseling and wealth coaching in that regard, as much as we do the financial planning, numbers crunching kind of support. And when they're integrated authorities, their net worth, their self-worth are aligned. They know what they like to do and what they don't like to do. And they're comfortable choosing the people to delegate to for doing the tasks that need to be done that don't bring them joy.
So I have a question about this, right? So we're focused mainly on inheritors, right? People can come into inheritance in a couple of different ways, right? They inherit from their family members. They can inherit it from a divorce. They can inherit it from becoming a widow. What about people who like have made their wealth themselves? And even if you've made it yourself, you still feel undeserving about it because somebody had to make the money. At some point, right? So like not everything is just inherited. At one point or another, somebody made it.
But there was a wealth creator, yes.
There's a wealth creator in the system.
Right, absolutely. And that person's big challenge is what to do with it, how to teach their kids. They learned in a completely different way than their kids will learn.
Right.
And their advisors, the wealth creators' advisors, who are very, very competent, probably, are competent at minimizing taxes, gaining control, making sure that minimal estate taxes are paid over the generations, making sure the assets last. So it's all method-oriented. How do you give it away and how do you grow it? And how do you make sure it still is there in 300 years? And that isn't always what the wealth creator wants. What the wealth creator wants is to have this be a bonding family tool so that everybody can work together or work independently in their own way and doing what lights their fire. And there aren't very many coaches for the wealth creator on giving their legacy in a manner that promotes strong relationships rather than promoting tax minimization and asset retention for generations.
Right. So even in listening to you cover this, I'm like, what about the emotional side of it, right? Like I keep coming back. I'm like, okay, that's all the paperwork. That's all the stuff the advisors are going to handle that. What about the emotional side of it? Like the people, the wealth creators who have worked so hard to create something big and beautiful and meaningful, and the people who have done hopefully a job that they love, you know, and have been able to create wealth doing what they love, yet still feel undeserving of it. And so, you know, you mentioned like you learn from your parents, right? So the wealth creator might not have had the wealth. Well, they're the wealth creator. So before that, it wasn't there. We're assuming that it wasn't there, right? And so there are all these money stories then that the wealth creator has inherited from his or her family, right? About you got to save. You can't let go of it. I think that a lot of the generations that came before us, especially if you emigrated to the United States, you held on to what you had tightly because you were likely fleeing somewhere and you must hold on to it just in case, you know? And so we then inherit these storylines, right? For me, I am an inheritor to an extent. I'm also a wealth generator, right? I'm kind of a hybrid of both in my own world, But I have stories from my childhood that was like, don't invest, don't invest, don't grow it. The stocks are dangerous. That's a dangerous world out there. You just save. You just get your head down and you work hard and you save, right? And then as I saved and created more wealth for myself, I was like, whoa, there's a whole world out here that I don't have to be as scared of, right? Because I had the resources to educate myself with like financial literacy, right? And so you go from the family of origin at some point that had no wealth, and then a person in the line becomes a wealth generator, right? And then you pass that along to your offspring and your family, and you create then generational wealth, hopefully, right? And there's all of these stories that are passed down in the in-between, right? That evolve over time.
And the wealth creator is often the only person in the family who's made it. And the fact that he or she has assets and no one else in the family does creates some really funny dynamics within the family, and a lot of stories and a lot of grievances and a lot of requests for loans and a lot of, you know, it, especially if they've made the money when they're young, before they've had a chance. And this is, I think, common with NFL players or actors who make it big young. So they have that challenge, as well as managing their, I don't want to say windfall, because it didn't just come to them. They worked hard for it. But I think most of them wouldn't call it hard work. Most of them would call it fun. They're real creators.
Yeah.
They love what they do.
Right. Like being an artist, right? Like I think about that in my world, and I'm a creator, right? Like I'm literally a creator. I host the show. I have women's support groups. Like if I'm making money off of this, yes, I'm working, but I love what I'm doing, right? And so a lot of the people that I know are in similar positions. A lot of people that I've cared about are in similar positions. And so I think it's really fascinating to just like consider the whole psychology behind it. Something that I do want to talk about is money as a problem-solving skill, and how it kind of sets a foundation sometimes if you don't have the appropriate support or emotional, social education and maturity to problem solve. It's really easy to throw money at problems.
Yes.
To make them go away.
A former coach of mine, Dan Sullivan, had this wonderful saying that was, if you have enough money to solve a problem, you don't have a problem. And that's true. You don't have the actual problem, but that creates other problems.
Let's get into that a little bit.
All right. Like an inheritor who doesn't get along with his boss, and he can just quit. He doesn't have to learn conflict resolution skills. Mm-hmm. Or he doesn't get along with his landlord. He buys the building. And so where a person without those financial resources has to figure out a way to solve the problem, the wealth owner doesn't necessarily, and oftentimes the inheritor did not get the skill set to solve a problem any way other than throwing money at it.
All right, guys, let's take a quick break so I can thank our sponsor, Sauna Skin Studio, with their OG location in Wynwood and their additional locations in Fort Lauderdale and Coconut Grove. Okay, so the best way I can describe Sauna is that it feels like coming home. Unlike traditional facials, Sauna's facials are rooted in education, and I love this so much. Every experience I have had at Sauna has been a chance for me to learn more about my skin and its needs. I love that the facials are effective while also being accessible enough to be a monthly ritual rather than a yearly splurge. This is why the Sauna membership is so great. I'm honored to be able to provide our audience with a promo code. Use the code THENOGLOW.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Oh, for $25 off of your first facial when booking at SanaSkinStudio.com and additional incentives if you book a membership. I have absolutely loved my skin healing journey with Sana Skin Studio.
So how do you help people develop those skill sets? And is it worth even trying? Can inheritors and people who have generational wealth learn those skills?
Totally. It's just often a little bit later and a little bit rote rather than through life experience. But we have a staff of financial planners and life coaches to help them with exactly that.
I think it's easy to run away from a problem if you can just pay to have it resolved, right? Right. But what does that cost you in the long run is an interesting perspective, right? If you lose relationships that you actually care about, or like if you had tried a little differently, like maybe something that you actually wanted might work out differently than it did.
Exactly.
Whether that's a job, whether that's a relationship, whether it's something going on with your children, whatever it is, you know, like there's always a cost. I have had this conversation with some friends recently. Like there's always a cost associated with it. Some people are fortunate enough that they can throw money at it, and that's the only cost that it is, right? A lot of other people actually have to deal with the shit in it. Like they have to sit in the shit, I say, you know, they have to sit in it and go through it and learn how to overcome the obstacle, right? But there's always, you know, in hardships, in relationships, in living, there are costs. And sometimes those are energetic costs, right? Like those are, it's like the price, that's what it costs to play the game. And it's the cost of doing business, right? And that's with anything. And that can be energetic. It can be financial. It can be emotional. It can be psychological. All of these things, it's all intertwined. That's my perspective on it, you know? And so when you think about money, that's physical. Money is an energy exchange. It took energy to generate the money. And so money is just a physical form of energy exchange and trade, right? Like I could trade you this mug for yours, or I could trade you this mug. Like back in the day, people bartered all the time. Today, money is just another energy exchange. And so what are you willing to exchange for it? Is it the problem solving? And I do think that there's something to be said about like, if you're in a financial position that you can delegate a task that you don't want to do and you can empower somebody else to do it. Like I have, like, it's not a secret. I have a staff in my home, right? I have people who help me take care of my children. I have a housekeeper, and these people I love dearly, and they take their jobs very seriously, and I treat them very well, and they get paid fairly to do those jobs.
And one difference is that you respect them.
Yes.
And that you have been where they are. You understand them. You've done the laundry. You've done the dishes. You've done the vacuuming. You have, you know, and you have the financial resources to delegate to someone who might like doing that more than you do. That is arriving and delegating as an integrated authority. And that's what we work with our clients on how to get there, to be empowered to delegate the areas they don't want to do, whether that's vacation planning or buying a vacation home or investing or picking up the dog from the groomer. All those things can be delegated if that's what the client wants and can afford and appreciates what they're doing in terms of delegating.
So when we talk about wealth prejudice and how it affects us, coming from the other side, like I grew up in a very modest family. My dad was a firefighter. My mom was a substitute teacher. I definitely have had my own weird opinions about, or my weird adjustments into having a lifestyle that is much different than the one that I grew up in. And the wealth prejudice exists. For me, I think I've experienced it more towards myself, if anything, in this weird way. But why then is it important to represent a demographic for which most people have very little sympathy? Like nobody feels sorry for a rich person.
Thank you. Thank you. Nobody respects. I mean, I shouldn't say nobody, but there is little respect for someone who has assets that they didn't earn themselves, because we're a society of do-it-yourselfers, and we don't respect that. And think about it.
Why?
They didn't do anything to be in that position.
So, I think I did.
Well, you didn't. Well, I'm not going to get into that.
Maybe not. Let's just skip over that. Yeah, good idea. Moving on.
But you understand, if someone is a trust fund beneficiary and doesn't even know the grantor, they didn't do anything to be in the position they're in.
So we don't feel sorry for them.
And we don't feel sorry for them, and we don't respect them.
Oof, burn. I mean, I do, right? Like me as an individual, okay, for the audience who's listening, Myra and I aren't saying like she and I don't respect them. We're saying like us as a society, people generally don't. You don't really feel sorry for them. You don't have a lot of respect for them. You're like, you didn't do shit. So like, okay, right? So why is it then important for you, Myra, that you represent these people?
Because they don't have others. They don't have others. They can, I mean, the stories I've heard of the prejudice, you know, the going out to dinner with friends and having them expect our clients to pay for it, or mm-hmm. not being asked to help, you know, because they don't look like they could afford a very expensive car, or just a myriad of circumstances that are odd for, I mean, a 25-year-old to be in a position where they could afford, they couldn't spend everything they had if they wanted to. It makes for funny relationships.
And what are some examples of that?
Not knowing other people's intentions. Does he like
That seems like the biggest one, right? Is like not being able to tell whether somebody is genuinely your friend or just in it for the proximity, whether that's status or to receive goods or experiences or whatever.
Along the same lines, it's hard for an heir to determine whether someone really is indifferent to money. Those people exist. And those are the ones that, you know, can be true friends and can, you know, yeah, they can invite you over and they live in a studio apartment and they, you know, cook spaghetti for dinner, but that's what they can do. And they offer that in return. Whereas you can tell when someone is a gold digger and or wants the social influence that comes with being a friend or access to the wealth creator. It just makes for very uncomfortable dynamics among friends and others.
You know, it's interesting.
I'm going to interrupt a second, especially if they're coming from a famous family. It's one thing to just have an innocuous family that, you know, isn't well known, isn't in the news and everything, but if they also have to deal with being the child of a famous person and having an inheritance, then it gets even the exponentially more complex.
You know, in hearing you say, like, I have a like a trigger response to the term gold digger, because I, unfortunately, I've been like the target of media shame and media, you know, whatever, bullying and stuff like that, where people called me that, right? And so I think that women are in a really unique position, because if you marry somebody who is wealthy, or even if you know that person from before they got wealthy, there's a narrative that, and you don't have, it doesn't have to be gender specific, right? But in this case, I am a female. Like, you can't be with somebody, with a successful man or a high achieving man, without that narrative kind of like following you. And then if you decide to not be with a successful man, like for me, the narrative was like, oh, you fumbled the bag. And it's like, well, which one is it? Like, are women gold diggers? Like, can you be in love with somebody? Is it okay? Like, hey, society, I have a question for you. Is it okay for a woman to fall in love with a man who happens to also be wealthy? Like, conversely, men aren't looking around. Like, men are very physical people. They're not looking around like saying, let me find the least attractive woman I can. Let me see who in the room I'm least attracted to. And let me go pursue that person. Like, I think that there's a part of it, Myra, that is primal, right? Like, you go after the chief of people, right? Like back in the day, you went after the chief because that secured, or the king, or you were whatever, because that secured your safety, right? If you were a man, you went to the person you were most likely to procreate with, right? To continue your lineage. That is what our ancestors did as a human race, right? To move forward in the world. And so it's funny because I have been subject to like the whole gold digger conversation. I do think that it is a very real thing. I think that by calling women gold diggers, especially, I mean, and obviously we can call men gold diggers as well. I'm learning all about that now. but like in that, it's almost like reducing men to just money. I'm like, oh, he couldn't be good looking and smart and really, really funny. Like, is he only a bank account? Because I thought he was all these other things, right? Like, people are multifaceted. Like, you can have money and be smart and hot and funny and all these other qualities, like entertaining and well-traveled and well-spoken and, like, you know, energetic and spiritual, all these other things. And I think that to reduce people to their wealth is so unattractive for other people to do, you know? And I wish that, I'm glad we're having this conversation because I think that more people should be open-minded. I think it's society at large, it's really easy to look at famous people or rich, wealthy people, or whether they're wealth creators or inheritors, and have preconceived notions about them as if they aren't a whole multifaceted human. And I think that that's part of where a lot of these lessons come back to, right? So it's like, you can't have the financial wealth, like the planner, without also having the life coach element. You know, you can, sure, but like, it's a disservice not to have the both coexist.
You said it well. You know, I can add very much to that, except perhaps when it's the wealth creator, they have come into their wealth as a result of doing something. And every time they had a success, their self-esteem went up at the same time. Yeah. And wealth creators are future focused and abundance oriented, whereas an inheritor is legacy focused, scarcity oriented.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Why? Why scarcity focused?
Because if they screw up, they don't have the confidence that they can earn it back again.
Because they did not practice the skills that got them there in the first place.
Right.
That's why it's so important for people who are the wealth generators, right, to instill the work ethic, right, and the life experience in their children so that they have these life skills, right? I mean, even something that I think about in my family is like the way that I see it, I'm like, my kids have to work. Like, whether that's coaching a sport, tutoring kids, babysitting, working at the ice cream shop, whatever it is, like, my idea is that like they're gonna know what it means to put in some effort here and problem solve and have to do these skills, have to have life skills. You don't just get to have a schedule change out of your class because you don't like the teacher. No, sir. You're gonna have to like sit with your big feelings and learn how to adjust. You know, I think these are really, really important lessons that wealth generators have to pass along to their kids and to their family members. Exactly. And you hope that that's happening, but it's easy, right? Like the generations that came before us, they just want to give us and make our lives so much easier. They tend to. You want to give your kids a better life experience than the one that you had, right? You don't want them to work as hard or suffer as much, right? But how do we create less suffering while also teaching life skills that are going to be really, really valuable in the long run? And that becomes part of the family legacy, that the wealth isn't just part of the family legacy, but the work ethic and the kindness and the giving back to the community, which is also something I want to talk about with you, and how people feel, people who have wealth. Is it an obligation? Is it a duty? Is it a responsibility? Can it be just a simple desire to want to give back?
If you know one philanthropist, you know one philanthropist. And there are so many, different ways of giving. And I think the one detrimental way of giving is giving out of guilt, giving out of duty, giving out of social pressure, giving for the recognition. All these things point to a low self-esteem. Mm. And I don't think there's a formula that, you know, if someone has this much, they should give that much, or if so. I think it has to come from the heart and soul, and it has to be, the wealth holder has to understand the impact they're having both on the organization they're giving to and on their own finances, and be okay with both.
Yeah. Something that I've considered as I've identified as a philanthropist before I even had any money, because I was always like volunteering, and it was just part of my ethos as a kid. Like I felt like if I made money that I was like, I want to give, because I always have something to give, right? That was like my, I don't know, the way that I'm programmed. And now that I have a little bit more money to be giving to charitable causes, it's funny because like my son went through chemotherapy, right? And I get hit a lot with requests for cancer research and this and that and the other. And it's something that I'm really passionate about, right? But I also think that like, I know for me that I'm not in the category of giving, that I don't feel like my amount of giving would move the needle enough, right? I'm like, I'm going to leave that to the bigger hitters, the bigger hitters than me. I feel like I can give X amount of dollars to this one organization, and those dollars will be stretched really, really far and have a greater impact on that organization, even if it's smaller, even if it's something different, right? Than something that has hit close to home for me is something like pediatric cancer, right? I'm like, I have to sit and look, Myra, at what, where, how my dollars are going to go to use, how an organization is going to use them. And for me, you know, and I'm sharing this because I have a lot of people in my audience that I think are in higher income households. And then I have a lot of people in my audience who are also in regular, normal household incomes, and they want to give, right? And they don't know how to, and they don't know where it's going to make the most. And like some of them, what you have is you give of your time, and that's what it is, right? And I think that kind of coming full circle to what I was saying before is like, it, no matter what, it's an energy exchange ultimately, right? Whether it's in dollars, in your talent, right? Time, talent, and treasure, right? That's what all the charities will hit you with, is your time, your talent, or your treasure. And it's true. It's no matter which way you look at it, it's an energy exchange. And to your point about not doing it from a place of guilt or duty or obligation, and doing it because it's something that you believe in and it makes you feel good. And I do believe that giving to other people does come back to serve you in some capacity. I really do believe that.
Yeah.
If we are talking about inheritors, right? We know that they have dealt with that many inheritors, right? Not to say all inheritors, but people who have inherited wealth, there are a lot of ways and obstacles that they have to, that they come up against, whether that's their own shame, their own self-worth issues. They're maybe potentially feeling like they're undeserving of their wealth, or like a grand sense of entitlement to their wealth, right? Like my parents are so-and-so, and my parents left me this, and I got this out of a divorce, or this is what my auntie left me when she passed away, or whatever it is, right? Like what are some of the challenges that people face as inheritors, and how can they tackle them? Like how can they overcome those challenges?
The first thing I think an inheritor should do, and this is a should, and I don't have many shoulds that I
know, because should is a shame word, right?
But I strongly advise them to understand what they have.
Is what?
To understand what they have. Most or many don't understand what they own. So understand the businesses they inherited. Understand the portfolios they inherited. Put together a net worth statement. And then understand what their money archetype is.
Ooh.
Are they a maverick? And they can discover that in our Way Into Wealth program. So if they go to wayintowealth.com, it's an 8-session program one-on-one with Melissa Hoyer, our life coach and financial advisor, and they can find out what their money archetype is and how, who are they as a result of their wealth, and then doing some financial planning on maximizing what they have, maximizing the joy, maximizing the spending, maximizing the tax minimization, to maximizing the investments that align with their values, maximizing what they have.
Myra, this is great. This is a wealth of knowledge, right? So I love that three things that inheritors, but really anybody with any kind of money, right, can look into, because wealth is subjective. It's also subjective, right? You can come from nothing and have more than what your family had before you, and you are considered wealthy in your eyes and maybe theirs, right? So one is to understand what you have and your bit, what businesses you might have inherited, a portfolio, a net worth statement. Two is to determine what your money archetype is, which people can find at wayintowealth.com in your 8-course series. And the third thing is to maximize, and that's maximize joy and spending and all of the above. I think these are some great tips that we can close with and leave our audience with. And I want to encourage everybody to check out Way Into Wealth. And I want to thank you, Myra, for taking the time to speak with me on this very loaded topic, you know, and I think it's sensitive to talk about. People don't want to talk about it. You don't want to talk about rich people. People don't want to talk about it. Nobody wants to talk about like the rich people being prejudiced, you know what I mean? Or the prejudice against rich people. People are like, oh, come on. Let's all
roll our eyes. I wish I had that problem.
I wish I had that problem, but it's something that is important and relevant to speak about. So I appreciate you and your experience and your knowledge. And I look forward to chatting with you, and I look forward to everybody checking you out.
Well, thank you. And if I could just add, if they want more information, they can go to thewealthconservancy.com or twcinc.org.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Myra.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Bye, Nikki.
This podcast was brought to you by Sana Skin Studio. Be sure to use my code, THENOGLOW, for $25 off of your first facial at Sana when booking via sanaskinstudio.com. More than a skin studio, Sana is a movement towards healthier skin and self-love. Thank you so much for listening to The Know. If you loved this episode, go ahead and share it with a friend. Words are so powerful, and someone may need to hear what we covered today. And if you really loved this episode, please take a moment to rate the show and leave a review. Your comments are so important and valued, and they give other listeners insight on what to expect on The Know. You can connect with me personally via Instagram at Nikki Sapp Spo and The Know with Nikki Spo. My hope for you today is that you are fearless in looking inward so that you can be your highest, most authentic self and go after the life of your dreams.
I'm not going to lie, you're slacking. You're slacking on starting that business you've been holding off on. It's just living in your head. And if you don't act now, that idea is going to leave, or maybe someone's going to take that idea. And there's a tool that I personally use, and that is Shopify. You don't need to be a web designer. You can just start moving, zooming in, adding the text you need, adding pictures you need. And Shopify has so many templates you can use from. Get it out of your head and onto a website with Shopify. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sell. They make it easy to manage growing your business. They help with details like shipping, taxes, and payments from one single dashboard, allowing you to focus on all the important stuff like growing your business. With Shopify, your first sell is closer than you think. Established in 2025 has a nice ring to it, doesn't it? Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/sonoro, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/sonoro to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/sonoro.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.